Hi everyone, Matt Polka here with ACA's Cable Talk. We are so happy today to have Sandy Hendrick with us from HTC in Horry County, South Carolina, where we're going to be talking about communicating to customers in the midst of a retransmission consent dispute. So let's get ready for Cable Talk. Matt Polka back with ACA's Cable Talk. I am so happy today to have one of our members joining us on the podcast, Sandy Hendrick, who is Marketing Supervisor for HTC, located in Conway, South Carolina, which serves pretty much Horry County in South Carolina, not too far outside of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Sandy, great to have you with us on the podcast today.
Matt, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Well, we have some important issues that I know our members are going to want to hear about regarding your experience this year in a retransmission consent matter. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in cable and, why you've been working in the cable industry for two decades.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I started here. Like I said, I grew up right here in Conway, so I've loved the area. HTC was a great company. Kind of coming out of college, I looked at it, and I got to come in here and take part in helping to introduce high-speed internet here at the company. And then through some transitions, I got to move over to the video side, which was lots of fun. I tell people at one point in time that I used to negotiate all of our contracts. I think now I've become to more I get to manage those contracts. As everybody knows, they've become a lot less of a negotiation, it seems like. But I've been here going on, this will be my 20th year now, so it's been a very fun industry to be in, lots of changes, and I think a lot more to come in the future.
Well, that's for sure. I want to ask you about your company in particular and some of the work that you do there. But you mentioned broadband, coming in on the broadband side, now working on the video side, but still seeing, you know, the impact and importance of broadband. How would you describe sort of the impact of what your company provides by way of broadband in and around Horry County and what difference that's made for your customers and communities?
If I go back 20 years ago, Horry County was a lot different than it is today. Of course, being a cooperative, you know, we provided phone service to places nobody else wanted to go. We similarly did that on the broadband side in the early days, whether that be with our cable or with DSL at the time, just to serve some customers that nobody else would. Now our area is growing. Horry County over the last couple of years has probably been, in what I'm reading, maybe one of the second fastest growing areas in the country. We're seeing upwards of 4% growth year over year of the population. So with that has brought in a lot of some other, you know, where the competition once did not want to go there here now. So we're doing a lot of fiber overbuilds to remain competitive. Our speeds are now, you know, the standard 100 megs for our customers. So we feel with the change in the delivery and what customers expect, it's our goal to keep up with that and provide it to them.
Well, that's terrific. And certainly you can't be successful these days without having a very significant broadband presence, which literally connects customers and communities to the world, and I know you're doing that in your market. Tell us a little bit about the background and history of HTC, as well as the customers and the communities that you do serve in and around Myrtle Beach and Horry County, South Carolina.
Sure. HTC started back in the 50s, like I said, as a cooperative. A few gentlemen got together and once again, when nobody would provide phone service, they got together and formed the cooperative. We served the rural areas for many years. Now, over time, the community, like I said, we serve Horry County. We also have some very limited exposure in Georgetown County. From a DMA perspective, Horry County falls in Myrtle Beach, Florence DMA. Georgetown spills over into the Charleston DMA here in South Carolina. But our community has so changed from just a rural perspective to now, of course, you know, Myrtle Beach being a huge tourist destination. We have Coastal Carolina University, so we're big, highly concentrated with the university and students that come down. Years ago, it used to be kind of you had your summertime and the crowds were here, and then it would slow down the winter. We've become a year-round now, and I think over the years, Of course, until this year, we had Hurricane Florence, so we've had pretty good time with not major hurricanes in the last 10 years. And I think the snowstorms up north have definitely driven down our population from Ohio, New York, New Jersey. We've seen a lot of migrants come down this way from there.
I can imagine. I'm sure it's a lot more comfortable in the wintertime than it is up here for sure. So speaking of the hurricane, how did you fare through the hurricane this summer?
From the hurricane itself, the winds and everything were not that bad. What got us, we had some record-breaking floods. Within the last 10 years, we've hit the 10, 100,000 year flood. And this was probably the worst. From an HTC perspective, we had neighborhoods that had never flooded in the past. We worked a lot with the residents there. One, on some communications of trying to keep service up as long as we could, as well as working with them, letting them know at a certain point we would need to take service out of that area to protect our equipment so we could get it back and restore their equipment as soon as the waters receded and they could get back in. We still actually have some areas that are still impacted by the flood today. The water's gone, but a lot of houses actually, you know, being bought out by FEMA at this point in time. It was some pretty record-breaking water that we saw this time.
I can imagine. I've never experienced a hurricane and don't want to, but we certainly wish you all the best, and as well as your customers and communities. So thank you again, Sandy, for being with us here today on Cable Talk. The reason we're here together is because you had a retransmission consent renewal earlier this year at the end of June, beginning of July, with Nexstar in your markets. But you took a different approach to addressing that. And we're not here necessarily to talk about, you know, the details of the contract or the rates or conditions, which we can't talk about anyway, but more or less how HTC evaluated the renewal that it was receiving and then responded from there by way of outward direct communications to customers to really tell them the story about what retransmission consent is, what impact that would have on your customers and their rates, terms, and conditions, and how, you know, you as a company were prepared to face it. So why don't you set the stage for us first about this renewal and what you were facing?
Sure. Well, this time, actually, for us, it was a first time dealing with Nexstar. Nexstar had bought Lynn Media, which our original contract was still with Media General. So we were going all the way from Media General to Nexstar, and we had never dealt with Nexstar before, although we had heard that they were one of the fun ones to work with. So at that point in time, when it came around to it, our deal was actually kind of a mid-year deal. It was a June-July time frame, and it was not on cycle. So we had actually gone through a couple other renewals back in December. We did a lot of education with customers then. We were dealing with Sinclair and Raycom at the time. So, of course, we had educated a lot to our customers there. We were hoping we could actually get the Nexstar agreement, although it was expiring in June, that we could roll it into that December, but Nexstar actually pushed that out. They told us they wanted to deal with what they had on the table that was expiring, and they would hold off on ours. Our thought process was the longer we waited, you know, it was only going to get worse and not any better. That fear kind of came to fruition. And really, at the end of the day, we were probably getting about 2 months to negotiate while we had been asking, you know, all the way back in December and January to try to get the deal done. So you can imagine, without going into rates, when we saw the first proposal come through, it was pretty shocking. Again, going from Media General and not being the Nexstar agreement we were already in, there was some significant changes there for us on the rates. Partly based on our CBS affiliate that they had in this market, as well as they had the My Network affiliation here in the market, and the rates they were asking for collectively on both of those was pretty far out of line from what we had seen on other agreements.
So as you evaluated this proposal and you saw the significant increase in rates and the pressure that would put on your rates to consumers, how did you react to it? What was different this time than your previous renewals with other broadcasters, et cetera, where you said, look, I really think we need to do something different this time, and you know, this is what we're going to do. So what was different this time, and how did your company react to it?
I would say initially, from the start, when we started negotiating, there wasn't a difference per se. We never want to have to bring customers into a dispute. I don't think it's fair to the customers. It's not something they're paying for. But at the same time, you know, we couldn't sit back and over time in good faith believe that this is going to get better without doing something. And that's not good for the customers either, because it's only driving up their bills. So again, we had started this process in dealing with Raycom and Sinclair in December. There were no blackouts there, but we had already started a PR campaign and spent a good part of 2 to 3 weeks educating customers about what we were being asked for by the broadcaster, how it impact them. So of course, that process 6 months later, when the Nexstar came out, again, we felt similar. We're going to need to take this step of educating customers. We're doing this, you know, negotiation right now. Nexstar is asking for a significant increase that we're pushing back. At that point in time, we kind of used and created a web page and all of our communications, you know, fair price. That was what we threw out there. If, quote unquote, you could call it a fair price, we kept telling our customers that's what we were at least pushing for. And our thought process was, if we told the customers we were fighting for them, then we wanted to really mean we were going to bat and fighting for them. With the Nexstar, that actually meant that we did go dark and had a blackout for about a week with Nexstar until we got things resolved.
I want to come back to a point you mentioned, which is, and I'll do this in a little bit, but it is a risk to go out to customers in education, because consumers are oftentimes are driven, you know, directly by price. And if you tell them your prices are going up, they may look for alternatives. So there is a risk, and I want to get your thinking on that in a minute. But tell me a little bit more about some of the things that your company specifically did. You mentioned a website. What other kinds of means did you use and employ to help educate your consumers about understanding what retransmission consent is, how it works, what impact it has on the customers, and what you were, as a company, were trying to do to keep prices low?
Got
or lower?
Sure. Yeah, well, of course, since December, going through that round, we have several different things. We had kept email, newsletters, as well as we have a magazine, and we spent significant effort just doing kind of general retransmission consent, what it is, how it affects you, the FAQs, just as an education. We wanted to stay top of mind knowing that the Nexstar was coming up. As we saw the Nexstar negotiations kind of going south, a few weeks prior to expiration is when we got a little bit heavier in what we did. We took a large presence on social media. We ran a lot of television advertising or cross-channel on our own system, using the messaging of kind of, you know, would you pay 150% more tomorrow for what you paid, you know, today for the same item. At a certain point, as we got closer, we started involving local press. A word of caution there, and I think it's okay. No matter how well we found you educate your local press, sometimes it's not going to come out the way you stated it. I think anybody that's been around long enough understands, you know, that may be the case. But I will tell you some other things that I really feel helped us a lot. Our goal was, we wanted to tell the story. We wanted to be in front of the customer. So through the website, any communications we sent out, we created either a form on the website or we had a email address, and that email specifically, we asked customers to send us their feedback and their comments, and we made sure every single comment that came back in got a personalized response explaining to the customer and helping them through their issues or their comments that they had. And that was something that Nexstar could have done but did not do. And I think that was a real benefit of showing us being local. We cared. We wanted to explain to you the real situation.
What about social media? You mentioned that. I mean, what was your plan regarding social media, how you used it? I mean, what platforms did you use, and how did you respond, you know, once you would get feedback on social media?
We definitely, social media, of course, Facebook, we have a large presence there. We have a good following of over 10,000 followers on Facebook. With your help, and also, you know, Twitter was another place we put it out there. As far as the responses, that was also one of the reasons we wanted to create kind of an email address as a, you know, sometimes comments on Facebook, you don't know what you're going to get. And we didn't want to get into this battle on Facebook if you had that one or two customers that were just really, you know, either negative or bashing the situation. Again, we didn't want to hide those comments. I mean, we wanted this to be open and honest discussion. But at the same time, we created that email address as a way to, okay, if things get out of hand, let's divert this conversation offline. Here's the way we can do it. But we kind of put a plan together about every day. As we got closer, things, of course, ramped up. Particularly even to the point when we went dark with Nexstar, then it almost became a daily, and the social media would kind of match our emails. They would go hand in hand to make sure we were communicating with customers. But it started almost 2 to 3 weeks prior as more the education process. As we got closer, it then became more specific to, okay, here's what's going on with Nexstar, to once it went dark, we use that messaging of trying to educate customers. Look, this is not an HTC issue. This is an issue through the industry. Switching providers does not help this issue because it will come up again. With the help of the ACA, we also were able to take that social media to the point of, you know, getting some national pickup. I think multicast or broadcasting cable, multi-channel news, some others kind of had some articles that we were able to pick up and also show customers, hey, this isn't just HTC here local. This is a bigger issue. And so we passed along those through social media.
What was the response? As you started to educate your customers prior to the blackout, the broadcaster blackout, and then leading up to and then in the blackout, how did your customers respond to your messaging?
In the court of public opinion, we won hands down. Again, we were dark for a week. I believe we were dark in kind of an off period. It was summertime. But as far as feedback we got, 99% were positive, and it helped us come up with what we coined Stand with HTC. And we kind of used that as a backing, and, you know, we kept logs of the comments that came in. The social media kept following this. Hey, we stand with HTC. Push back. We stand with HTC. So that seemed to be the overall concept we got. And then we kind of took that concept and ran with it. We're fighting for you. Stand with HTC. And that became kind of our slogan during this.
Were you worried that your more direct approach to communications, media, public relations, consumer engagement might backfire a bit in your negotiations?
Well, what we found, we did a lot of planning. We did not know how Nexstar would go about this. And at least what we found from a Nexstar perspective, they were relatively quiet, which kind of told us we weren't sure that they wanted to be, you know, out there in the public. All we could find, and yes, there was some hesitation, you know, we're going into this sight unseen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And at the same time, you know, we also felt, if we don't do anything, we do know what the outcome is. So unfortunately, we got to that point. We felt, okay, there is a line in the sand we must draw, and if it gets to this, we're pulling the trigger and going, knowing that there is a risk. And so we decided to take that. From a Nexstar perspective, I don't think we got pushback from the customers. Again, Nexstar was very limited on what they told customers, which we used against them, as if they're not willing to tell you their side of the story, what are they hiding within this? All they really did is they ran some scrolls. Of course, you may lose your popular programming from HTC, you know, and then they put a phone number to call. You would call that phone number. Once you called the number, they had their own pre-recorded message that would reiterate, hey, let HTC know you want them to keep the programming so you don't lose popular programming, and then it would actually send the customer to the HTC call center. So we took advantage of that. We put our own pre-recorded message up above that and caught the phone calls coming in. And just to play the game, we then actually forwarded that on to Nextdoor corporate office, which I will tell you that caught them majorly off guard. Their corporate number we put on there went to a man secretary that answered the phone. And I think when she started getting the phone calls, because I made a few myself, she had no clue what was going on. So I'm not sure the communications at Nextdoor between the local company, station was great from what we found.
Now, you mentioned earlier not only the previous negotiations that you had the December before, but then as you approached the Nextdoor renewal, about your commitment to communicate to your customers. But, as we talked about a little bit earlier, there's a bit of a risk there. When you go out forthrightly to tell your customers the facts about this complicated issue called retransmission consent, and then the impact on rates, that consumers could potentially react negatively and not positively. How did you process that question internally, where you and your colleagues were saying, does it make better sense for us to communicate more or to communicate less?
I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. Knowing that this was not the first time that we had talked to our customers about retrans, we've talked to them for over 10 years. Now, where I think we've messed up and maybe the industry has messed up as well is we talk about retrans when the negotiations are going on, and then it's kind of 3 years they don't hear about it, and then they hear about it again. We've tried to start getting better about that and maybe not be as direct every single month, but continue to keep talking. And I think other companies are doing this now, whether it be in the broadcast surcharges that a lot of companies are putting on their bill is kind of below the line. So customers see, hey, these fees are out there. This is what it's costing you. We've done it in bill messages where we constantly try to keep a reminder, hey, this is what retrans is. This is the process. This is ultimately how it affects you. As I mentioned, we have a magazine and some other newsletter articles that we try to keep the education piece going. And after we've gone through a blackout, we continue to try to do that even more now. Because I think what's going to happen come next round, we've only seen this compound and get worse and worse. So our goal internally talking through it is, okay, this should not be a surprise to anybody. And I know that it's almost like cable rates now year over year continue to go up. I don't want to say customers have become immune to it, but I do feel that it's getting to a point it's almost become expected, which is not a good thing, but I think that's what's happening now. And so our goal was we need to continue to educate, not only so they realize when rates go up, here's why, but also maybe that education becomes the catalyst to change in the future on this process.
Wow, that's terrific and well said. So I take it as you look back now on this renewal mid-year this year, that the effort to communicate more directly with your customers then in the midst of a problem as well as on an ongoing basis, you would see as a success.
I would definitely deem this as a success. Now again, I don't have the magic crystal ball to say, hey, this works great for everybody. If we were to do this again, even if that blackout lasted 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months, I can't tell you what would happen. I do believe that by doing nothing, I can tell you what would have happened because we have seen that in the past. And I can tell you from an HTC perspective, what we did, the efforts we did, and through the tracking we did, there was no loss of customers that we were able to correlate to going dark with Nextdoor. And I believe that we've kind of set the groundwork, knowing that this is probably going to happen again. We've got the leg up right now because we've been doing the education piece. So I believe it was a success for us.
Well, it leads right into my next question, which is just what you said. It's not like, these kinds of difficult acrimonious negotiations are done. They're continuing. Here we are now. We're recording this 10 days before the end of 2018, and I can think of a half a dozen or more members that are in the midst of very difficult negotiations for retransmission consent right now. So as you look ahead, not only, you know, from your own company perspective, and I think you've said that already, which is we've already laid the foundation to engage with our customers so that they know we are communicating directly with them. They can rely on us for facts, for good information, for full disclosure. But, you know, not all of our members necessarily, you know, are where you are today, even though, you know, they're contemplating it. So what would be your advice to our members that no doubt like you will be in the midst of difficult retransmission consent negotiations and that might be on the fence of do we engage our customers more directly or do we just try to get the best deal done and move on?
Gotcha. Well, the first piece of advice I would give is definitely from a company perspective, do lots of internal discussion, you know, all the way from your ground level, everybody's on the front line, to your upper management, and make sure you're all on the same page. Because we spend a lot of effort, we spend a lot of meeting time, a lot of face-to-face time, making sure, okay, let's get this right. We want to give the same exact message. At the same time, that is kind of why we created the form. So every customer comment that came in could be directed back to either myself or kind of the core group. One, it didn't put a burden on everybody. So everybody was informed, but they didn't have to go all the way down and know 100% of the details, nor did we have to worry about them maybe giving some information they shouldn't or maybe some incorrect information. So one, make sure you're willing to put in the time. But again, I want to reiterate, and I was big on this, if you're going to put the message out there that we are, quote unquote, fighting for you, I was a believer that, you know, fighting for you did not mean, okay, we're going to take a 75% rate increase and feel like we did a good job. I felt that fighting for you meant we're going to really fight for what is right, even if that means, you know, we could come out with a black eye at the end. We were going to take that chance. So I think it's just you know, my biggest recommendation is, again, not fair to customers that it has gotten to this point. But the other thing I was thinking through, the message we kind of used also was kind of the David versus Goliath story. And I think that's what's not been hit on through all these retrans over time. There's been a handful of the HTCs of the world and the smaller companies that may have gone dark, but you don't hear about those as much as Dish and Direct and Comcast have now gone dark, and you're thinking it's just the big guys against the big guys. I think the more you start hearing of these smaller companies that are maybe getting, you know, kind of the David versus Goliath picked on by the bigger guys, then that starts painting the picture, and we can pull together and then, again, point back, hey, this happened over here to this company, and this has happened to this company. It's not just here. This is a problem everywhere that we need everybody to kind of help with in getting it fixed and resolved.
In your outward communications in your community, did you also reach out to and communicate with local elected officials, state officials, federal officials to make them aware of the potential of a drop in your marketplace and why that was happening?
With your help, we did pass along to the federal side on that, letting them know what was going on. We did send to our local congressman here as well, just so they were aware that this was going on. Again, I will 100% agree, the more we can get out there, the better. And once that gets out there and I think, okay, if it happened to us, it happens to somebody else, they start seeing this. I think it's the story of in the past they've heard us complain about it, but then it has almost become, you know, well, you complain about it, but everything seems to work out in the end. I think if it gets to more, you know, I'm not advocating blackouts, but if it gets to that point and the more those are seen, then it starts really saying, wait a minute, you've complained. oh gosh, now you've also gone dark. This must be a bigger problem than we thought. So yes, I do think over time that those are things that definitely need to continue to be done.
Looking back at your renewal and your plan of education and outreach, what in your mind is maybe one thing you wouldn't do again and one thing you would do differently the next time around if you should find yourself in the same place?
Again, I think on the do differently is I would probably start sooner. I think that we kind of sometimes sit around and wait and hope things are going to get resolved and you don't have to bring the customers into it. I think looking back, the whole time I've been talking about education, I would have started sooner. We were probably maybe 3 weeks out before it went dark, before we really ramped up. I think kind of starting sooner would give us more opportunity. As far as something I would improve or I would recommend for everybody, one of our most successful pieces, and I think there should be more of that, is I call it the face-to-face, but at the 11th hour when the negotiations didn't happen and we did go dark, we had a personalized video message from our CEO, Mike Hagg, that we posted on Facebook. It was filmed in the middle of the night, you know, and I think that was probably one of the most successful things we did that actually showed we really were here fighting for you. We've been going through this all night trying to make this work. Unfortunately, it didn't. And then he reiterated the point. And then it really put the local face with, you know, look, we really mean business. We were trying to work for our customers, and Nexstar just was not willing to work with us. So I think being able to put a face to your negotiations and keeping, you know, that is significant, and I would do more of that in the future.
Well, Sandy, you have given not only me the pleasure of talking with you about this, but also our members an enormous amount of very credible advice and suggestions that I know will help them in the future as they encounter these negotiations. And I just want to thank you for being with us today at Cable Talk and for all you do, not only for your company and for your customers, but also the support that you provide to our members, where I've seen you at various meetings, whether the summit, the independent show, the Winter Educational Conference, really helping to share with other members. So thank you very much for being a part of this podcast and all you do for ACA and our members.
Well, Matt, I appreciate it. And, too, just for my members, too, that, you know, the ACA was a phenomenal help to ACC through all this, getting that out there. So thank you for all that y'all do.
Well, it's our pleasure to serve each and every day. So, Sandy, thank you again. Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up another edition of ACA's Cable Talk. Again, thanks to Sandy Hendrick from HTC. We look forward to talking with you soon in the new year. Thanks, everybody. Bye now.